ScentMarks can offer a uniquely effective method for a trademark owner to stand apart. In this two-part podcast, Finnegan attorneys Julia Matheson and Anna Nadanov join us to discuss ScentMarks. Julia, can you start us off by explaining the concept behind ScentMarks?
So ideally, a trademark acts as a guarantee of consistent quality. It's an indication of origin. It's a valuable marketing and advertising tool that's capable of conveying an enormous amount of information without constant consumer re-education. What the soda tastes like, what it looks like, etc. And tons of psychologists have confirmed repeatedly that among our various senses, scent offers the stronger effects on memory. And if you have ever walked by somebody on the sidewalk who's wearing the perfume of a long-lost loved one or encountered a scent from childhood, you know how powerful scent can be and how quickly you can have a memory come forward. Olfactory marks, which is another fancy word for scent marks, offer a uniquely effective method as a result for trademark owners to stand apart from the more traditional mark and the noise in the marketplace.
Anna, since the Trademark Act doesn't include specific provisions about scent marks, where would a practitioner look for guidelines on registrability and protectability?
The Lanham Act, which is the federal statute governing trademarks, uses the broadest possible terms to describe the range of items that qualify as trademarks. It says trademark is any name, symbol, or device, or combination thereof. So although scent marks are not specifically enumerated in the statute, U.S. case law recognizes that a scent can function as a source identifier where it is distinctive and it has no utilitarian function. That's where the PTO rulebook, also known as the Trademark Manual of Examining Procedure, comes into play. It provides that scent marks can be registered on the principal register of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office if they are, number one, non-functional, and number two, have attained consumer recognition, also known as secondary meaning. It's an expensive feature both to establish and ultimately prove, but if you're able to show that the scent is non-functional and has acquired that level of consumer recognition, you can have it registered on the principal register. If it's non-functional but has not acquired consumer recognition, you can register it on the supplemental register, which gives notice to third parties and newcomers that you claim rights in the scent, but does not provide the same level of protection or presumptions allowed by the principal register.
Julia, explain the concept of functionality as it applies to scent marks.
The functionality doctrine, which was defined by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case known as Inwood, prohibits trademark ownership over a product feature if it is essential to the use or the purpose of an article or if it affects the cost or quality of an article. Trademark laws are all about preventing unfair competition, not fair competition. Fair competition is fine. And the Inwood ruling is an essential recognition of the potentially negative anti-competitive effect of granting a single entity what could become a perpetual monopoly over a single product feature, because trademarks don't have term limits the way a copyright or a patent does. A trademark can last forever as long as it remains in use. Inwood basically recognized if a feature is necessary to fairly compete, no single entity is allowed to claim exclusive ownership. So to obtain protection, a trademark owner has to prove that the scent serves no important practical function other than to help identify and distinguish the brand. So context obviously is key. Scents in perfumes or body lotions or potpourri or room deodorizers are not subject to trademark protection because scent is the functional purpose of those products. Functionality is, however, only one of the hurdles to protection. An applicant is also required to demonstrate acquired distinctiveness. And what that means is that the particular scent has been used so exclusively in the marketplace and promoted so extensively that consumers have come to recognize it as a source identifier, as a trademark that indicates a single source. The trademark manual, which Anna referenced earlier, provides that the amount of evidence that's required to establish that a scent or a fragrance functions as a mark is substantial. So it's a very high threshold that companies face if they want to get protection.
Anna, walk us through some of the case law that addresses the concepts of functionality and distinctiveness.
So the seminal case that dates back to the 1990s is the In re Clark decision from the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. And that decision essentially opened the door for the protection and registration of scent marks. That was the first case where the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, or TTAB, found that applicants' scent can be registrable. In that case, it was, quote, high-impact, fresh floral fragrance reminiscent of plumeria blossoms for sewing thread and embroidery yarn. And the board found that it functioned as a trademark because the fragrance was not an inherent attribute or a natural characteristic of the yarn. The board also held that trademark owner was the only person in the industry who marketed threads with a fragrance. And the applicant emphasized and promoted the scent as being the source identifying feature of its goods. And also there was evidence from dealers and distributors who recognized scented yarns as coming specifically from this applicant and not from any other company. So based on inherent distinctiveness and unusual nature of this scent in connection with the yarn product and consumer recognition in the relevant space, the board allowed this mark to register in the principal register. In a more recent decision from 2013 in Ray Poll, the TTAB refused to register peppermint fragrance and scent for angina spray medicine. It did so on two grounds. The first one was lack of acquired distinctiveness. The board held that the applicant has not done any look for advertising, trying to build consumer recognition as it relates to the source of its angina medicine product. There were other players in the marketplace using the exact same scent, including a directly competing product with peppermint flavor and scent. So the board concluded no distinctiveness. With regard to functionality, the board held that peppermint scent was also functional for angina spray medicine. The reason for that was existence of a utility patent that showed that menthol-containing substances actually benefit the medicine in that it requires smaller dosage of nitroglycerin and reduces side effect of nitroglycerin, which is an active component for angina spray medicine. So peppermint scent and flavor actually helped the medicine function better, and it was anti-competitive to allow one single company to have monopoly over that scent and have a trademark registration over that scent.
How many scent marks are currently registered in the U.S.?
Actually, it might surprise you that there are not a lot of scent marks registered. There are approximately 2 million registered trademarks on file with the USPTO, but only about a dozen pertain to scents, and only three of those are registered on the principal register, and about 11 or so appear on the supplemental register. One of them is the yarn scent that we talked about earlier in connection with the Clark case. Another more recent one is a registration from 2015 for bubblegum scent for shoes and bags. That applicant was successful in that case in establishing acquired distinctiveness and getting a registration on the principal register because it submitted numerous unsolicited media articles talking about the bubblegum scent being associated with the product. There are about 11, as I mentioned, supplemental registrations. One of them from 2014 is Verizon's registration for a flowery musk scent to create ambience in its stores.
Julia, why do you think so few scent marks are registered, and what seems to be the key obstacle to registration?
Well, I think quite simply it's this moving target of what qualifies as functional and the very high threshold that's imposed on being able to demonstrate that consumers have come to recognize the scent as a trademark. So the question comes down to what is an inherent attribute or a natural characteristic in a product? For retail stores and hotels, does the scent render the environment more pleasurable? Is that enough to render it functional and therefore kill protection? What about toilet paper or paper napkins or paper towels? What about light bulbs? When they're lit and on for a while, they have a nice scent. If a scent increases the appeal or the cachet of a product, you've got to ask, does that render the added scent functional? If you learned, for example, that store sales increased dramatically following the installation of sensors, the question is, would your opinion favor trademark protection for the scent in that instance or not? And in terms of acquired distinctiveness, the question is really, how much is enough? In an application to register the grape scent for lubricants for internal combustion engines, the applicant, who was ultimately not successful, submitted a declaration to the PTO that it had used the grape scent for at least 5 years prior to the filing date of the application, that it annually sold at least 5,000 bottles of lubricant during that five-year period, and that it advertised the products in numerous catalogs with the kind of look for advertising that specifically points consumers to recognizing this feature as a source identifier. But the examiner in response found that use less than 10 years and the relatively low sales volume was insufficient, and the application was subsequently abandoned for failure to respond to a subsequent office action. Then you have the case for the bubblegum scent for shoes and bags that Anna referenced previously, which is registered on the principal register. And in that particular case, the applicant, in support of its application, submitted examples of media coverage of its scent mark, Google search results where 9 out of the 10 search results returned references. The entire first page of the search results basically were about applicant's bubblegum scent mark. The PTO found that evidence sufficiently persuasive to grant registration on the principal register. So one of the questions you have to ask is, based on looking at these cases, is this essentially a requirement that an applicant demonstrate fame in a different box?
Our guests have been Julia Matheson and Anna Nedonov, attorneys at Finnegan, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. For more commentary on intellectual property news and issues, to listen to other podcasts, and to receive additional information on the firm, please visit www.finnegan.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Finnegan.